afternoon or good evening, and welcome to episode 2 of A Link to the Cast, the brand new video games podcast available online, on download, and on your MP3 player. Now, if you're looking for news, views, and reviews from the world of video games, then some people might say you've come to the right place. You've certainly come to the right place if you want to hear any of the following, because this month we've got reviews of Street Fighter 4 on the PlayStation 3, we've got Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars that's out on the Nintendo DS, and the big one this month, Resident Evil 5 on the Xbox 360. We'll also talk about what gadgets make you happy. Have a think about that, because we're wanting your emails on it. We'll have a full roundup of the latest news from the video games industry. First, though, let's reacquaint ourselves with the team. I'm Mick. I'm taking you through all things Nintendo DS and Wii. Then there's Rick at PS3, man. Sell us yourself. What have you been playing this month mainly?
I've been going back to Fallout 3 quite a bit, actually. Heard a lot of good things about it, so I've decided to dedicate a fair few hours on it, and I've been enjoying it loads. Absolutely buckets.
Okay, each month we're trying to find a little bit more about members of the team. So if you could just think for the next couple of minutes of women on TV that you have a little bit of a crush on. I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later on. Brian is a man, all things Xbox 360. What's got your gaming goat this week, Brian Shelf?
Well, I've been playing Resident Evil 5. Of course, though, I want to announce myself now on the podcast as king of consoles, as I now have all four major consoles that we review. Although I'm a bit inexperienced at PS3, I might ask for people to email in and tell me what games I need to play on that.
Has the PS3 arrived?
No, it hasn't arrived as of yet. I'm chasing up on that today, but I got it free with my mobile phone, so I wasn't going to turn it down. And if I don't enjoy it, I'll get it on eBay. So any emails in to tell me what games I should be playing on it would be greatly received.
All emails welcome to games@citytalk.fm. Send them that way. We'll all get hold of them. Brian Shelf as well. Have a quick think now. Celebrities, particularly female celebrities that you see on TV that you have a particular crush on, the more embarrassing, the better. Rick, have you managed to think of yours yet?
Oh dear. It would be Carol Vorderman from back in the days. Back in the days of Countdown, man.
No.
Good times. Yeah.
Mine is mine currently at the moment, I have to say, is Jasmine. I don't even know what I say. She's called Jasmine, and she's on a
who the hell?
A Place in the Sun, Home or Away.
I thought you said celebrity here.
No, well, she is famous.
Okay.
She presents it to a Place in the Sun, Home or Away. She's on in the afternoon. She's absolutely stunning. But she does have a scorpion tattoo on her back, which I'm not sure is a bit off-putting.
Yeah.
Brian Shelf, you must have an equally embarrassing one to Carol Vorderman.
I don't know if it's embarrassing. I see her as potentially a future wife, as I like to like to label most women. It's Claudia Winkleman for me. I think she's absolutely stunning. But there you go.
Claudia.
What are we doing to ourselves here?
I'm just people are getting to know us, and I think
Carol Vorderman. Yeah.
These are embarrassing facts. Yeah. I'll just help that whole cause there.
Yeah.
Each week on A Link to the Cast, or rather each month, each episode, we're going to be doing a little bit of a competition where I set up a story. It's a made-up story, but you have to imagine, if the story actually happened in real life, what would the headlines read in the tabloid newspapers? Yeah, the tabloids.
Okay.
So last month we had a comedy one involving Solid Snake from Metal Gear Solid. You can still download that, by the way, courtesy of the website and on your MP3 supplier. This week's story, though, goes like this. The star of Metroid went to a school reunion, only to find the old school bully was still bullying people. The strict head teacher was just as strict, and the school heartthrob was just as popular. You could say not a lot had changed at all. Rick looks like he might have had an interesting one. Brian Shelf, did that make sense?
Yeah, so it's obviously a slow news day at whatever paper this is.
It was the Nintendo Times. We're going to come back to that, though. If you do want to get involved, we'll pick out the best ones. games@citytalk.fm is the email address if you want to get involved in that. Okay, so it's a link to the cast on your MP3 player on download and online as well. Taking a look now at some of the stories making the news from the video games industry. I want to start off with Fallout 3. Rick, you touched on this before. Got some new downloadable content. It was supposed to be available for it on the Xbox Live service. It's been pulled, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was an exclusive for the Xbox Live official launch, but there's been all sorts of problems released with it. People have been reporting that all sorts of things have been disappearing. They've been walking around the new game as they've installed the pit, as it's been called, within Fallout, and all these kind of objects have been disappearing. They've got these big red exclamation marks all over the game world. Now, it got so bad, and there were so many reports and complaints on it, that they've actually pulled the patch from the Xbox Live. You can't actually now download it while they try and fix the problem.
So presumably they've got to try and fix the entire thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's pretty cataclysmic from what I've seen. There's all sorts of people moaning on the forums for Bethesda, which are the people that have launched it. You know, not only have great game objects disappearing, but they're still there in the game, so people just can't walk because there's objects that they can't see in the way, and there's areas that they can't actually get into. People have tried deleting the patch that they've downloaded and paid for and trying to re-download it again, and it's all been getting stuck. Other people are saying, oh my god, I can't download it again, I'm going to have to pay a second time.
I was going to say, is there a financial implication with this?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You've got to pay to get this extra piece of downloadable content for Fallout 3, and people are thinking that they're going to have to pay again. It seems to be pretty chaotic on there. Now, I'm sure that Xbox and the people behind the scenes are smart enough to work out a way of doing it, but it just seems like total chaos and nobody has communicated how it's going to work, because they've just basically launched it, had all these problems, everybody's moaned about it, and they've pulled it again, and it seems to just be complete chaos around it.
Brian Shelf, I know you've been playing on the Lost and Damned downloadable content. Has that been sort of glitch-free? Has that just run as smooth as you would expect from sort of the regular game?
Yeah, it's run as smooth as the regular game, and I downloaded the first piece of downloadable content for Fallout 3, but I haven't actually got round to playing it yet. But I think, you know, it's the initial days where things have gone wrong. I think in some ways people are looking on this a little bit wrongly, saying, oh my god, it doesn't work, they've pulled it. But you've got to look back at actually, you know, why this is such an advantage. You've got to look back, say, back to the N64. There was a game on the N64, I think it was called Silicon Valley, or something like that, which was released as a cartridge, and it came out, and obviously something they'd missed while they were testing it was they'd forgotten to switch the object detection on a crucial part of the game, and there was an item you couldn't collect, so you could only collect 49 of the 50 items that were needed, and there was no way of finishing the game. Now, of course, if it's an actual cartridge that you bought, there's nothing they could do about that at all, whereas in this case, they've put it out, they've obviously rush-released it, found that there's a whole load of problems, and, you know, it can be patched like a PC game. So I think in some ways, although it's annoying for the people who've downloaded it, it actually shows that, you know, downloadable content probably is the way forward. That,
yeah,
you know, when there are mistakes, they can easily be sorted out, and it doesn't really affect your enjoyment of the game.
Well, you say that, but I mean, Fallout 3 is such a big game. On the forums, there's all sorts of people which have taken the day off to, like, download this. They've booked their holidays in, you know, they've paid the money up front so that they can download it straight off. And, you know, you can't get your holidays patched, can you? That's
true,
the problem that a lot of people moaning about here.
I would say that they've made an error with their lives.
We're going to move on now to something which we talk about the future of video gaming could play a big part of it. I don't know how much you've seen of this, guys. On Live, it's called, which is this new service, which basically it's almost like an online platform, which means you can download and almost stream video games. Graphically advanced video games, shall we say, so you can play them on any compatible device. So presumably that means that as long as the developers are on board with it, it's going to be available on this new bit of kit. It's called On Live.
Yeah, and it's a tiny, tiny piece of kit, because I think the trick here is it's basically streaming of games. So you've got your little On Live piece of equipment, which is no bigger than about 3 inches by 1.5 inches from what I've seen in the mock-ups on the On Live's own website since they've launched this product through the Game Developers Conference. And basically, there's very little technology in that apart from a video decoding sort of piece of kit. And all your controller functions go from your controller through the internet to the online servers, which then process what you're doing in your game and feed the video back to your TV.
Well, I've got a quote here. Steve Perlman is behind this. He announces at the Game Developers Conference. He says, OnLive is the most powerful game system in the world. No high-end hardware, no upgrades, no endless downloads, no discs, no recalls, no I can't even pronounce that word.
No obsolescence. Yeah, I've got that quote right there as well.
No recalls, no obsolescence. With OnLive, your video game experience is always state of the art.
And you mentioned earlier about the importance of the gamers supporting it. They've already got Electronic Arts and Ubisoft and Take-Two Interactive, so they've got some pretty big guns down there. From what I've seen, they're running Burnout Paradise and Hawks, which has only just been released, and BioShock, Mirror's Edge, and a whole bunch of, you know, really cutting-edge games already through this service in their, you know, beta stages. So it looks... I dismissed it at first as maybe being a sort of pipe dream, one of those kind of Gizmondo-style gaming ideas, but it actually looks to be a pretty serious thing.
We've talked in the past about the future of video games and being a lot more. We talked about downloadable content being a large part of that. I mean, this has got... the conference, as we speak at the moment, the conference is still running. There's 16 games... that are on show. The interface to it looks absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
This could be the new direction because people talk about the Xbox 360 and the PS3 getting to the top end of what's physically achievable in terms of how good a game can look and the amount of time it takes to create those games. Is this the new angle? Is this the new direction?
It's certainly incredibly interesting. Going back to what Perlman has said, he reckons that you would only need a 1.5 meg connection to get a good gaming service through this, and a high def service can be provided if you've got a 5 meg broadband service, and meg's pretty standard in the UK these days.
Where do you live? This is my concern. You say the people say 5 meg's pretty standard, but how many people actually get 5 meg regularly, particularly on peak times? And also, isn't it a tremendous waste of actual bandwidth sending these pictures down when, you know, we've seen, particularly with the success of the Wii and the continued success of the DS and the DSi, that, you know, graphics isn't everything anymore. You know, one of the biggest selling games last year, Grand Theft Auto, although, you know, it was impressive, it didn't have the best graphics out there. And is it, you know, forcing games in the wrong direction where, you know, it becomes trying to impress people visually as opposed to actually creating stunning gameplay, which seems to be the way the market's moving?
Is there an issue as well about going back and replaying these games? If it's essentially streaming, do you have the option to save, for instance?
Well,
or is it going to go back to the old passwords you got to type?
No, I'm sure it's all going to be saved, but it's going to be, they're calling it cloud-based gaming, so all of your information is stored on their servers. You know, this OnLive piece of kit that you have in their room.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, the OnLive equipment you have in your room is literally only a video decoding piece of kit that has a Wi-Fi connection to your controller. It doesn't do any processing at all, apart from putting the, you know, image on your screen. So all the saving is done on their servers, and it's all streamed.
Also, I mean, there's a lot of big name developers saying they're interested in it. But again, are we getting to a situation where people are having to spread themselves too thinly across too many platforms? And I know it's been talked about for years, whether it will actually happen.
I wouldn't worry about platforms if this comes out, man. This is going to kill platforms if it works. That's the whole idea.
This is the issue. Brian Shelf has now got all the platforms available. He doesn't want this one. He's got, absolutely. He's invested a lot of time in a lot of time and a lot of money.
But again, I mean, you know, there's a very hard core of PC gamers who do like to sit in their chair at their PC playing games, whereas, you know, I still enjoy the fact that I'm playing it downstairs. It's in the front room. You know, it's not necessarily the most casual gamer-friendly environment. Is it going to be too hardcore to actually catch on?
These PC gamers sitting in their chairs playing their games.
My word.
Streaming.
What would you believe, eh?
Future games, it seems to keep coming back as a pointer in this particular news slot. You tend to get sort of four and a half years out of a console before you're looking to move on. Xbox 360's just turned 3.
Yeah, can you believe it?
And it feels like it's still going strong. The Wii's been out, 2.5 years now? And that's still going from strength to strength. I'm going to touch on the DS, which has sold something like 100 million DSIs.
And still going strong.
And going out and getting stronger as well. Xbox 360, are we on to an Xbox 720 anytime soon?
Normally you get to see sort of pre-run of a next console about a year and a half before they actually plan on launching it. And I've not seen anything to say that Microsoft have got another console, you know, ready to go just yet anyway. So
I think as well, from the way that the Xbox is set up, I mean, still it's not the most profitable console to actually sell. Are they going to put themselves in a position where they're going to, you know, put another console out there that they're going to be losing money on when they, you know, there's still great games coming out and there's still games selling for it as a console? Is there any need at the moment to push the technology any further? And do they need to push the technology any further? If they're looking at Nintendo, by far the most graphically inferior of the consoles is doing the best business. Are they going to sit down and start to think, you know, well, do we need to push ourselves? Do we need to make ourselves any faster and better for the moment?
I want to bring you a new story now about gadgets that make you happy. And believe it or not, we've got 3 consoles in the top 10. To discuss This and a little bit more is Crispin Thomas, founder of the Gadget Helpline, and he joins us on the line now. Crispin, were you surprised to see that the Nintendo Wii's come out on top of gadgets that make us happy?
No, I wasn't. If you think that there's been a lot of bad press about gaming and kids not being active, becoming couch potatoes playing video games, it was a very, very clever move on Nintendo's behalf to bring in a marketing campaign with the Wii Fit to show suddenly the answer to all the questions we parents have been talking about is how to get our children to move while they're playing these video games. And the second point is of course, they've been able to appeal to a much wider and possibly older audience.
I mean, video gamers will, for years, have known that Nintendo were churning out fantastic consoles and fantastic games. It seems for the first time, though, that Nintendo have got this strategy where they can actually get into that mass market. And, I mean, they've beaten the iPod is at number two in the charts. Now, Nintendo has essentially hijacked a lot of what Apple was doing in the early stages of the iPod.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. But, you know, very successful products are always a result of listening to what customers are saying. And Nintendo has taken on board this couch potato idea, as I said, and they've produced a product which involves a lot more people, and a lot more activity, a lot more physical activity, instead of just sitting around playing a video game. So it's pretty natural that people are going to actually respond to that. We hear about all our kids today being obese. Anything to combat that has got to be good news.
I'll just roll through the top 10 so people can get a sense of the other things that are in there. We've got Nintendo Wii at 1. 2 is iPod, followed by the iPhone. The Xbox 360 comes in at 4. I'll come back to that. Then we've got BlackBerry's Sky Plus, the MacBook. And then, interestingly, the Nintendo DS comes in at 8, followed by a TomTom SatNav and the Sony PRS-505 Reader. Now, the Nintendo DS, it's hard for us to find anybody these days who doesn't have one.
No, I know. Well, obviously, it's in a price bracket where it's a sort of must-have present for the kids. It's around £100 or less. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, if you take a child on a journey or they go anywhere, or if you're even a someone a bit older, it's something you can whip out of your briefcase or your pocket and just start playing, you know, to pass some time. So again, you know, a very clever portable gadget produced by Nintendo, answering a very basic need for people out and about.
Crispin, for those who don't know, you get something like 300,000 people a year calling the Gadget Helpline. If they've got gadget rage or they've got issues with electronics in the home, is there anything in particular to video games? Are there any particular consoles that you receive particular calls about?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what's sort of voguish or faddish at the time. I mean, around Christmas, we had a lot of Blu-ray calls coming in about people not being able to put Blu-ray discs into Blu-ray players. And then, you know, for example, with the Sony one, having to download the patch off the Sony website to make it work.
Yeah.
It depends what's new and what's out at the time. But generally, our members call about advice for gadgets they're thinking of buying, or advice about gadgets that they have, or they, you know, they may want to know something else about them. And in the credit crunch at the moment, obviously, if you do call the Gadget Helpline, we might be able to make you realize that there's a function on the existing machine or gadget that you have that you didn't know about and stopping you having to go and buy another one.
We're about to see a new Nintendo DS, the upgrade, the DSi is going to be coming out. But it looks as if certainly the Nintendo Wii and the Xbox 360 is going to have quite a decent lifespan still to come. Do you think they're going to be in that top 10 for the next certainly few years?
Well, most definitely. I mean, if you take, for example, the Xbox range of games, say something like Call of Duty, I mean, it's the games that are proceeding forward, in terms of their sophistication, as opposed to putting your Xbox out of action. I think that, especially with the addition of the memory facilities and this kind of thing, I think they'll be there for a long time to come.
Crispin Thomas from the Gadget Helpline, thanks for joining us on A Link to the Cast. Okay, a link to the cast then. I just want to pick up on one final news story, which is sort of related to the way that the gadgets are keeping people happy, and it's particularly related to video games on the high street. The success of the Nintendo Wii has helped computer games retailers defy the downturn, according to the Entertainment Retailers Association. Revenues for video games rose 21% in 2008, despite the collapse of key retailers like Woolies and Zavvi. Among the top sellers, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, bizarrely. FIFA 09 as well. The key driver was the success of the Nintendo's latest console, it reads here, which encourages players to make physical movements, and the handheld DS platform. You can tell this is written for people who don't really know about video games. But here are the figures. These are the important ones. The Entertainment Retailers Association, now they represent 90% of games, music and video sellers. Video game sales have helped retailers add 3.8% to sales volumes and 1.5% in value. So while the rest of the high street is going down the pan, i.e. CD sales aren't happening, DVD sales on the decline, video games on the increase.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Zavvi was going down the pan, I was getting a little annoyed because I'd go into all the Zavvi shops I could find and they weren't discounting the games and stuff anywhere near as heavily as they were CDs. You could get DVD box sets of Friends for like 20 quid for the entirety of all seasons. And yet, you know, Fallout would still be 40 quid, and it's obviously because that's where they were still making money on it.
CD albums and DVDs dipped to new lows of £8.10 and £8.71, while video games, this is the cost of buying a video game, increased 8% to £22.99. So although we're having to pay more for the video games, it shows that the games industry is in a relatively healthy position, you would say, a very healthy position, given the current state of the economy.
I think it's because, you know, what people are seeing more and more, you only have to look at, chains that like Domino's Pizza, you know, it's people staying at home more and more, you know, instead of going out and having an expensive night out, are staying in. So the people who actually provide services in the home are actually doing quite well, and computer games ties in very readily to that. I mean, it seems a lot when you spend, you know, if you go to the high street and pay full whack for a game of £40-45, you know, it seems a lot for that. But when I look at the amount of time I got out of Fallout, which was 100 plus hours, it's actually incredibly good value. So you can understand it in those terms.
Absolutely. If you compare it to like going to the cinema, which can be like 6 quid for a standard seat these days. So if you're going with your partners, 12 quid, and that's for what, 2 hours of entertainment?
Don't get me started on how much I had to pay.
I was going to say that takes us on very nicely to our next section, which I know we talk video games on the podcast, and it's the main focus of our attentions, but I've got to touch on Watchmen, because it's a film which a lot of people who are into video games will probably want to go and see that film, will have read the comics growing up, will have certainly paid a bit of attention to it, because it simply looks amazing. I managed to catch it on the IMAX, the big screen.
Same here.
I know Brian did as well. I think it was £9 odd a ticket, something like that.
Yeah, that's about right.
The question is, was it worth it? Shall I give you my little, my thoughts
on
the
film?
Go
on, throw your 2 pence in.
Okay, well, I thought visually, I thought it was fantastic. It looked great. As I say, saw it on the IMAX. I couldn't really tell if that was a significantly better picture, i.e. definition and so on and so forth. It just looked like, to me, like a big cinema screen. But I thought it looked excellent. I thought it was well created. It was crafted very closely to the comic book, which I actually quite liked because I didn't really want them to stray too far from it. The main problem for me, and that sort of throws forward to a couple of other issues, was the length. Now, it was 2 hours, 45 minutes. Now, for me, that was beyond how long a film should be. And that, to me, says that it wasn't adapted for the screenplay quite tightly enough and quite well enough.
I think you hit the nail on the head just a little bit earlier. You said it stuck very closely to the comic book. It stuck a lot closer than I expected it to.
Almost shot for shot.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was sections where Dr. Manhattan was there thinking about...
Do you have to talk about Dr. Manhattan?
Yeah, speaking
yeah,
of
let's
length.
Not... speaking of length, are you going to do that or shall we? Yeah,
If you are to go and see it at the IMAX, don't sit in the front two rows because you are just at the perfect height to admire some of this well-crafted CGI.
It's funny because in the comic book, he starts off with his massive costume and stuff and then he gets a bit sick of it.
Thank goodness you're going there.
Oh, yeah. But of course, he loses it. He gets bored of it. He doesn't see the point in it anyway. And that's more than evident on the big screen, shall we say.
I think there were always going to be criticisms of the film. I thought... I thought it worked. And when I came out, I sort of felt exhausted by the sort of experience of it. But actually, when I think back to it now, I think actually that was a great film. I maybe would have liked to have seen it in two parts.
Yeah. Or I would have quite happily, you know, seen it about a half hour less and then them throw all those extra scenes into the DVDs or Blu-rays and things and, you know, leave it as the full experience for your home theatre rather than sitting for 3 hours with a crick in your neck in the IMAX cinema.
Hey, this is Laszlo from Rockstar Games and Grand Theft Auto 4. You are listening to A Link to the Cast.
Okay, so it is A Link to the Cast. It's time for the reviews. We've got three for you this month. We've got Resident Evil 5, we've got Grand Theft Auto, Chinatown Wars, and we've got Street Fighter 4, which I know Rick has been sat on for quite a while now. Yeah. I'm going to keep you waiting just a little bit longer, because without a doubt, for me, the title of the month is Resident Evil 5. A lot of people played Resident Evil 4, took it in a new direction. A lot of people loved it. But last month we heard from Brian Shelf, who said the demo, yeah, not too sure about it, not sure whether or not it's going to work. You know what? He still went out and bought the game and played the game, and now he's going to review the game.
Well, yeah, I was really disappointed with the demo, and it's coming on the back of, you know, easily my favourite title on the Wii, which was Resident Evil 4. The demo felt a little bit, it felt a bit too close. You were too close to the character. It seemed to be steered more to cooperative play. It looked fantastic, but it seemed to be going a bit back to the old ways of, you know, running out of ammo, having to shoot people. Thankfully, a lot of that has actually been sorted out in the final version. The demo clearly was on quite a hard setting. I'm one of these people that wusses out immediately and goes on amateur, because I think the game is there to be enjoyed. It's not there to be frustrating. And with that setting, it's fantastic. It really, really is good. It looks incredible. Yeah. One of the strange things about it, one of the things which I think makes it less creepy than Resident Evil 4, which is one of the things I really liked about Resident Evil 4, it's one of the only games I've actually been scared playing. One of the weird things about it is it's set almost entirely in daylight, which is unheard of for a Resident Evil thing. You know, it's constantly bright sunshine, so you don't get any of the claustrophobia, you don't get any of the dark castles, you don't get any of the things creeping out of the shadows. But you know, it's still incredibly atmospheric. You get people creeping up behind you. It's not too hard. It's still challenging enough when you get these absolute hordes of zombies coming at you. The bosses are absolutely incredible. Sometimes I've just been killed because I've been too busy admiring the artwork that's gone into them. Story-wise, it's a little bit confusing. It doesn't seem to be quite as user-friendly story-wise as some of the other ones. It's relating a lot back to the old chapters of Resident Evil, which I'm unfamiliar with. I only started at Resident Evil 4. And I'm always a little bit baffled in games as to, you know, why so much emphasis is put in the build-up onto, you know, this is the story, it's going to complete the chapters. You know, what's the point? Basically, tell me where to go and who to shoot.
Well, that was the joy of Resident Evil 4, in that you were the guy, you arrived in the village and then suddenly all hell broke loose and you were trying to work out what was going on. You grew with the story.
Yeah, you were there to save the president's daughter, Ashley, weren't you? And then everything erupts around you.
And then when you saved her, you thought, what an annoying woman this girl is.
Just hide her in a bin and leave her there for a bit.
Well, one of my problems, I think, with it, and it's only a minor problem because it's a great game to play. One of my problems is it doesn't have the set pieces that Resident Evil 4 have. As you mentioned, you know, at the beginning, you get dropped off and there's a little introductory level with shooting a zombie and wandering around a house. But then you go down to the village and you get your sniper scope out and you can just see, you know, right down the middle of this village, and then suddenly you're being attacked from all sides. There isn't quite that element, and some of the set pieces are actually done in little FMVs, the little films, and you think you'd rather be taking part in it. It doesn't sort of build in the same way that the previous game did. It does feel a little bit conveyor belty of just going from one place to the other, shooting zombies. And, you know, I think it suffers as a result from that. I think when you finish a chapter, you don't necessarily want to go on to play the next chapter. You think that'll do for tonight. Whereas, you know, I lost hours of my life to Resident Evil 4, just, you know, one more go, I'll just do the next bit. But overall, you know, I think they've done an excellent job, and I don't think it was ever going to live up to Resident Evil 4, particularly the Wii edition, because you don't have the Wiimote. That's one thing I miss, the actual being able to point and shoot,
as opposed to
using the joystick, which is, you know, is always going to be a slower way of doing things and less instinctive. As a result, the enemy AI isn't as good on that front. You know, people do stand there for a bit because it knows it's got to wait until you can get the crosshairs slid across to them, as opposed to just being able to point and shoot. You know, but overall, great.
I had a quick blast on it myself, and for me, that was one of the main issues. I thought it looked absolutely brilliant. I think the Xbox can do that sort of, the sun is high in the sky beating down, you know, in the middle of the day.
Yeah,
I think it can do that, and I think developers have realised that the 360 can do that very well. The one thing I would say, when you have got maybe you've got four or five guys in front of you and a couple behind you, you're almost looking to be able to do that Resident Evil 4 thing of just picking them out one by one, light gun style.
Burst some heads and just move on.
Yeah. Rather than jimmying your cursor to and fro.
I think you're probably right. The Wii was just so brilliant. I played Resident Evil 4 twice through on the PS2, and then when a mate lent it to me on the Wii, I had to play it another three times through because it was just so much better to play with that point and shoot kind of feeling. It was brilliant.
Now, the way we review games on A Link to the Cast, we don't give them a score out of 10 or anything like that. What we say is, what would make you stop playing the game? So, Brian Shelf, in relation to Resident Evil 5 on the Xbox 360, what will make you stop playing that game?
Well, it's interesting. What did make me stop playing the game was Peggle. I don't know if you've ever played Peggle. That appeared
Resident
as downloadable.
Evil to Peggle. Brilliant.
Yeah, that appeared as downloadable on the Xbox, and I played the demo for about an hour and a half, and I thought, if I've got this much play out of it, I'll have to download the full thing. Yeah, that took up most of the time, just bouncing a ball
That's
randomly.
That's one addictive,
a
silly little
caves.
Game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So what will make you stop playing? Peggle. I like that.
Peggle.
Excellent. Right, I'll tell you what, we'll move on. And it's the game that I'm reviewing this month, and it's a massive title, you have to say, for the Nintendo DS. It's Grand Theft Auto. It's Chinatown Wars, the first time that that Grand Theft Auto has appeared in this handheld form, in this style. And I have to say, I've been blown away by the quality of it. There's been very few DS titles recently which I've thought that is a must have and that is a must play. Professor Layton being one of the sort of best games that I've certainly seen in the last 6 months or so. This for me is a fantastic game. The style of it is cel shaded. You still get you still get pretty much the same map that you got in Grand Theft Auto 4 being recreated in this cel-shaded form. So you've got a big playing area. The focus of the game really is on the action. So pretty much what you've got is you've got a top-down version, or should we say rather than a top-down, it's sort
kind of
like a 60-degree angle version of it. So you're not looking at it right from the top like you did on the old PlayStation, the original Grand Theft Autos. You're looking at it sort of from a 60-degree angle. Graphically, looks absolutely brilliant. There's something like 800,000 lines of code in this title, so it is the biggest game on the DS by far. It's smooth, it plays well, it sounds great, and you get the real sense of all the best bits about Grand Theft Auto titles. Action-wise, pretty much, it's what you get from a Grand Theft Auto title. You go around, you get told to go and meet these guys, shoot one of them, destroy their shop, stop somebody from dying by stealing an ambulance.
So it's as nasty as it's always been.
Absolutely.
Even though they've brought it to the kind of friendly handheld side.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's an 18 plus.
Wow.
Stay clear of it if you're a child. The thing that really brings it to life for me is the touchscreen elements. So you've got your top screen is where all the action's happening. On the screen below, you've got your PDA. So you've got your GPS on there, so you've got your map, you can plot all your different routes for that, get your favourites on there, get your specific gang masters you've got there, you've got your drug dealers you can have on there, your safe houses and all that sort of thing. You can pick all those out, have those all, you can just literally tap on them, it'll give you the route and you're away. It also does some absolutely fantastic thing. If you get in a car...
This is what surprised me a lot. I grew up in a nasty neighbourhood.
You have to hotwire.
But I've never been so happy to see someone hotwire a car. That was amazing when you showed me what you did on the DS.
Basically, what you have to do, you get in and then you get in the car, and then on the bottom screen, the dashboard appears. You have to take off the front panel and then you see the wires. You move the wires around. You put the two bare bits of the wire together and then twizzle. That fires the car up. And then on the fancier cars, you get the electronic immobilizer.
Really?
And you have to tack in your PDA. It gives you the code, and then you have to wait for the thing to scroll around, tap it to get the code to come up. There's the other one, you're in, say, an ambulance, and there's a guy in it, and he's got a heart problem, and his heart stops, so you have to give him sort of a heart resuscitation by tapping on his heart on the bottom Brilliant. Screen. There's loads of different elements like that. For instance, you go to a petrol station, and you have to fill up Molotov cocktails, including using the stylus to make sure that the rag goes into the bottle.
Brilliant. They've really thought about how to use that DS touchscreen functionality to add to Grand Theft Auto, because it's not just Grand Theft Auto and DS, is it? They've really added a lot to it.
And it's very playable. It's ultimately just one more go, which for me is that Grand Theft Auto thing. Just one more task, or you'll be halfway through a task and you'll get an email through, as it works on here. So you'll get an email through, and that email will say, you know, meet me at blah, or the Jamaicans are selling weed at a daft price, go and meet them at blah, and he'll say, plot your route too. And it's always that thing where you think, oh, I'll just do that one, I'll just play that one.
That's the best charm of any handheld game. I mean, I used to play a lot of Lumines on the PSP, which is like a rhythm action music game, and you play on your way to work for like half hour, and you just ping the PSP to sort of freeze it while you go and work, and you'd almost be afraid to switch it back on again when you got on the train to go home, because you knew you were at a pretty nuts hard level, whereas, you know, you can just go back in and choose any old mission you like if you're playing Grand Theft Auto.
You can
right?
do all that and more. Massively blown away by it. I'm absolutely... I would recommend it to anybody over the age of 18, certainly.
So what would make you stop playing? The big question there.
No, you see, come the issue on. With this is that it's so... You can easily play it, stop playing it, and then just open it up and carry on playing again. Mm. So in terms of what would stop make you stop playing on it... Certainly, for instance, last night, it was bedtime. it was a girlfriend saying, is it not time for bed? And it is that thing where you just go, just one more level. Just one more level.
And next up, I've got Street Fighter 4. Now, I mentioned a little bit about this on the first episode going way back, and obviously it's on the 360 as well. But since then, it's one of those games, if you've ever been a fan of Street Fighter 2, you can't go wrong with Street Fighter 4, because that's exactly what they've done here. They've brought Street Fighter 2 onto the modern platforms and made it look a whole lot of gorgeous. It is absolutely the most attractive beat-em-up there is going on the platform at the moment. It's got all the classic characters there, Ryu, Chun-Li, everyone's back, and, you know, essentially their movesets are all exactly the same, but one of the best things about Street Fighter series is, you know, the movesets were never massive, but there's enough variations on each move to give you something for each situation. So you can pull your fireballs as much as you like, but if somebody else knows how to do an EX spinning bird kick, they can just fly through that, and then they're right up toe-to-toe with you, and you're going to be inflicting a whole lot of pain. So it's basically Street Fighter 2 back on your new consoles, and I've been loving it. The big thing for me, which has really been annoying me, is, oh my God, it is hard. I don't remember... And it might be the case that Street Fighter 2 was really hard, but oh my God, it's hard. If you've ever played Street Fighter 2, please let me know if it was this hard. I've been basically making my thumbs bleed trying to unlock more characters, because you've got to go through all the arcade mode and beat, you know, go all the way through each time to unlock every character. I've got about two. I've been playing this game for like 3 months, well, 2 months now, going into my third month, and I've unlocked two characters. It's so impossible. But then again, that might be a reflection of my ability, because I go online and I'm getting spanked again. It's really, really intensely hard. The trick with Street Fighter has always been the timing, and I'm struggling to get it on a pad. We mentioned it again in the first podcast that I was looking to get a joystick. I've still not managed to get one, but I'm sure it has been made for the original arcade style joysticks. As a game, I think it's brilliant. It's certainly got me addicted, and I keep going back to it no matter how much punishing I seem to get. But is it the definitive beat 'em up for me? And I've got to say no. I think it's made me look forward to Tekken coming out at the end of this year more than anything else. So as a beat 'em up, it's great, but not the peak. What would make me stop playing it?
What would make you stop playing it, yeah?
Five consecutive online losses. The shame, the bruised ego, the absolute demolition within my own living room. It is an absolutely bruising game, but addictive nonetheless.
Excellent. Three reviews this month. Resident Evil 5, the thing that will make Brian Shelf stop playing that. Peggle. Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars, what would make me stop playing that? Maybe an hour's worth of just coming to bed now, dears. And what would stop Rick playing Street Fighter 4? Five consecutive online
one
losses.
Battered ego. Yeah.
It turns out being rubbish. That's what makes me stop playing yeah, it. Yeah. Being rubbish online.
I'm telling you, you can pour as many hours into it as you want, but unless you've got some sort of Street Fighter gene within you, I just don't see me getting better at it.
If we were really fancy, now we would have a little thing that would go, here's the mailbag, it would be some sort of jingle. We don't have one, so instead we've got this. And we're going to do the mailbag. How exciting. We're only in month two, episode two. We had episode 1A and 1B on A Link to the Cast, still available to download. A few emails there. I just want to touch on them. Ned, he says, yo, boys, got GTA 4 finally about a month ago after hearing your Lost and Damned review. I've got about 25 hours in and can't see the end. How close am I? P.S. Before you ask, yes, I do get sidetracked. Brian Shelf, I'll aim that one at you.
Well, Grand Theft Auto is as long as you want to play it, really. I spent most of my time before, without actually realising that there is a main plot thread, just spent most of my time messing around doing all the side quests. So it's as long as you want it. As far as the actual Lost and Damned play goes, I think I got about 15, 20 hours before I'd finished the extra things, which overall wasn't bad for what was about 16 quid or something like that. So you've still got plenty to go. But I mean, if you've not played the main game, I got 100 plus hours out of that. So, you know, there's Crikey. Plenty to still to enjoy.
JP says, chaps, I got a copy of Nintendo Magazine last month and it had a list of the top 100 games of all time, presumably Nintendo magazines. I agreed with most things on it, but GoldenEye only made it to number 55. What's all that about? Now, I've researched this a little bit and I've actually got myself hold of the Nintendo Official Magazine Presents 100 Greatest Nintendo Games Ever. And JP, who got in touch via games at citytalk.fm, is right at number 55, GoldenEye. Now, is this Nintendo being their official magazine having a dig at Rare? What's all that about?
It makes no sense to me. Possibly the shooter that made 3D shooters good. And halfway through the top 100, that's almost like an insult to anyone that's played it, I'd say. It's a phenomenal game.
It was an essential title, without a doubt, on the N64.
It's true, but time's moved on. You've got to look at it in current terms. I mean, how much play would you get out of Space Invaders on an old Atari now?
Yeah, but
you know, it was a game, it was a genre-defining game, it was a moment in history, but has it stood the test of time?
But do we believe there's been 54 better Nintendo games since GoldenEye, though? I mean, I don't know. Oh, there's Pokemon on the page there. Just turn it back, move on.
I was going to say, one of them, Phantom Hourglass, gets in at 38, so that says it all for me, because that was one of the most frustrating games. And lastly, SlamDunk105 says, any chance you guys can put friend codes online so we can hop up for some online gaming? I'm free next Tuesday. Do we want to go there?
Next Tuesday?
Do we want to go down there? Do we want to be putting things online? Do we want people to be getting in touch?
Well, when did he send it? Next Tuesday? We've missed it, unfortunately. I'm free. I'll give you my friend code, but it'd be a waste of time. Sorry about
that. Nice one, Slam Dunk. Thanks for your email. Okay, well, it's time to wrap up now. The way we like to wrap up here on A Link to the Cast is by talking about our competition, which is fiercely fought each and every month. We give away...
another excuse for me to humiliate myself. Yes. Come on, let's do this.
What we do is basically we give you a story featuring a Nintendo character or a PlayStation character or just a video gaming character from whenever. It's going to be a story involving them. It's an entirely made-up story, but if it happened in real life, what would the tabloid newspapers make of it? This was this episode's story. The star of Metroid went to a school reunion, only to find the old school bully was still bullying people. The strict head teacher was just as strict, and the school heartthrob was just as popular. You could say not a lot had changed at all. Brian Shelf, if that appeared in a tabloid newspaper, what would the headline be?
Right, mine is, I don't know if it's that good, schools, same as it ever was.
Oh, there you go, same here, man.
That's exactly what I've got written down. Same as it ever was.
Same as Aran being the lead character from Metroid, obviously. Very good, very good.
Oh, you see, I made up with that. If you can get a better headline than that, and I don't think you can, but feel free to email in games@citytalk.fm. Also, what you can do, let us know what you think of any of the games we reviewed today. Resident Evil 5, Grand Theft Auto, Chinatown Wars, a Street Fighter 4 as well. Coming up, episode 3, hopefully we're going to have a review of Mad World in there, which I know is out now on Wii, so let's get plenty of hours into that. And also there'll be a special update edition in the middle of April. We're going to be taking a look at Professor Layton and the Curious Village, which if you try and get hold of in any sort of supermarket or your regular game stores, still selling out across the board. You certainly can't get any secondhand or anything like that.
It's been doing phenomenally well since launch, and it's certainly something that we've all been playing and enjoyed quite a bit. So yeah, we figured why not make a little special devoted to the little DS game which we've been enjoying so much.
I've finished all puzzles in it as well now, so if you have any particular puzzles that you're stuck on, email and I'll try and solve them for you. I solved them all bar one. I've got to thank someone called Laura who solved the 130.
Well done, Brian Shelf, puzzle master. Get in.
Excellent stuff. Right, so that's A Link to the Cast for another month done. If you want to get in touch, games@citytalk.fm, send it that way. You can get in contact with us all via that. If you've got any reviews, got any questions, just fire them our way. We'll talk about them next month. Until then, we'll catch you next time. It was a visual feast. A little bit too meat and too veg, if you like. No, I'm going to start again.